We're ready to begin our new section of material where we're now going to start covering the sequence of chemical reactions you need to learn for the quarter. Now, do be aware that half of you have finished your exam, but half of you haven't. So I have to be a little careful about certain topics I discuss today to not give too much help to Section 2 versus Section 1 that has already completed their exam. And because of that also, I'm going to decline to answer any questions from previous material until the other section does have the chance to complete their exam. But we are going to begin with radical reactions today, which is one of only two times this quarter and one of the, three times actually. There will be three times this quarter where we discuss single electron mechanisms. So I just want to remind all of us the primary difference as far as representing radical mechanisms versus electron pair mechanisms, which is that we have these half arrows that we use because each half arrow shows where only one electron is going. So let's look at the specific reaction we have today, which is free radical halogenation. And this is a reaction whose overall synthetic utility is to convert alkanes into alkyl halides. So you might remember that last week I stuffed in at the last moment this framework that we're going to use to evaluate reactions from this point forward. And there were six items that I believe I had mentioned. One is this thing called synthetic utility. Second is the set of reagents normally used. Third are the set of conditions. So synthetic utility in this particular case is to take an alkane and make an alkyl halide. The reagents are diatomic chlorine or bromine. The conditions are that it requires light. And so often a shorthand that's used to represent light in science is to use H nu, the same formula that we use to represent the energy of a photon. Generally, when we say light, it means most frequently UV light. Along with knowing these three aspects of the reaction, we're going to discuss the mechanism and what consequences that mechanism has in terms of stereochemistry and particularly regiochemistry. I had mentioned the idea of a flashcard very briefly last week. And so what I really recommend that you do is you have on one side of your flashcard the mechanism, because as we learn more reactions, some of these mechanisms will get longer. You'll probably want to devote one whole side of a flashcard to the mechanism itself. The other side, put all the rest of this information. What is the utility, the reagents, the conditions? What are the effects for stereochemistry and regiochemistry? Yes?
Can we bring the flashcard during the exam?
No. Fair question. No, because there are other instructors who allow some form of resource on the exams. I don't, though. No, but it's not a silly question, but unfortunately you can't use them, no. But I can't do anything more than just tell you how important I think it is that you have these flashcards. And don't ignore me when I say make them, because just as in every other aspect of this course, when I warn you, for example, you've got this big nasty thing called NMR coming, and then when it finally came, everybody was like, oh my gosh, you have to know all that? Or when I tell you that the third exam is the roughest of the three exams this quarter, that you believe me. Yeah, this second exam is a lot of theory, a lot of long answer questions, but not as tough as far as information what you're going to have in the third exam, because this is just one reaction we're discussing today, and we have all these different aspects of the reaction that we're going to discuss. You have at least 10 more reactions you're learning this quarter. So 10 times this is what you have to carry around in your head for the third exam. And every exam next quarter is
at least the same way, if not more reactions per exam. But if we have a system, it's manageable. People survive OCHEM, right? But I'll tell you the honest truth, which I don't know if I said this at the beginning of the quarter or not. Why is it that for most of you who aren't chem majors that you're having to take OCHEM, particularly if you're pre-meds? Just to see if you can hack it. Because in med school, you've got thousands and thousands of pages of material that you're reading, all these things you have to memorize, all these things that you have to know. And the closest undergraduate equivalent course to something with that much content to it and that much theory and difficulty is OCHEM. So in fact, for OCHEM textbooks, 90% of the market for OCHEM textbooks are for pre-meds, not chem majors. And just because they want to see if you can hack it. So, with that in mind, let's tackle our first reaction, shall we? This is called radical halogenation, and the reason that light is required is the first step of the mechanism is for the halogen to dissociate homolytically, which means one electron goes each direction. Again, notice that I'm using these half arrows because each one represents where just one electron is going. And so that will produce two bromide radicals. The next step in the reaction is that that radical will react with an alkane. Without me getting into the explanation part of it, we should know at this point that tertiary carbocations are more stable than primary and secondary. And it turns out for similar reasons, which we'll discuss after the exam, that tertiary radicals are more stable than primary or secondary radicals. So it's going to be, in this case, more likely that this tertiary hydrogen reacts. So bromine can introduce an electron into that system, which causes the bond to break. Notice the two arrows going together. That's trying to show that hydrogen ends up with bromine. And then there's one more arrow that's needed because the bond has two electrons in it. And so if one ends up combining with bromine to make hydrogen bromide, the other one is left behind on the carbon. The second step in this part of the process is that the radical that was just formed reacts with yet another molecule of bromine. So you need as much bromine around as you do have of the alkane. At the end of that step, we'll have our alkyl haline. And we'll regenerate a bromide radical. So let me stop right here and put some terminology on top of this. The first step of this process is called initiation. In fact, later on when we discuss radicals again, we'll talk about radical initiators, compounds that encourage the formation of radicals, or compounds that themselves easily turn into radicals. The second part of this process is called propagation. Why is it called propagation? Well, because this whole process overall is known as a chain reaction. Why? Because you start with a bromide radical, you end with a bromide radical. So as long as you have more alkane around and more bromine around, this reaction keeps going and going and going and going, repeating the same process every time. And so that's a chain process. As a kid, the way I learned about chain reactions was through discussing nuclear bombs, but that's not the only place where that phrase shows up. This is another example. So you initiate the reaction, it'll then keep on going or propagating while you still have enough reagents around. And then there's one of several possible termination steps. If this reaction went perfectly, if there were no byproducts, you would eventually end up with a point where you might have an alkyl radical and a bromide radical, where the two of them could combine with each other, which would make the desired product, the same alkyl halide. But you don't make another radical at the same time. So although you make the same product, this reaction would stop at this point because you've consumed the radical. You haven't produced a new radical. This is if things went well. There is always the chance of other termination steps. This is the problem with radical chemistry, is that radicals can do lots of side reactions. A less harmful side reaction would be if two bromide radicals happen to encounter each other in solution to remake bromine, which wouldn't be so bad if you still have light around. The bromine could re-break up and continue to react. But you can also get other side products. In the same way that it would be possible for two bromides to encounter each other in solution, it would be possible for two alkyl radicals to encounter each other in solution. And there's one more event that it could occur, which is instead of either a bromide or alkyl radical combining, you could have what's called abstraction, meaning that it pulls, in this case, a hydrogen. Pulls a hydrogen off the molecule. But if it does, that makes a radical that can combine with the radical that's already on there. For those of you who really studied your butts off for this exam and looked really closely at that mechanism lecture that we did, you might remember there was this process called disproportionation, which is exactly what this is. You're taking two systems that had equivalent structural situations. They were both saturated, meaning all single bonds, with just one radical. But you end up with a product, a set of products, where in one case you have a single bond still for HBr, but then you have a double bond on the alkane portion, what used to be the alkane. So this is disproportionation. The uneven production of a single and double bond. And just this portion of it is abstraction. A radical pulling hydrogen off a molecule. All four of these can and will happen, all four of these termination steps. So the reaction starts by making the alkyl, not the alkyl, the halogen radical. That goes through this cyclic dance where you keep reacting it with an alkane, which then goes back and reacts with another molecule of the halogen to remake the same bromide radical. Then there's one of these possible termination steps that can bring the process to a halt. Well, except for the reformation of bromine. That, in the presence of light, could keep on going on. Do you need to know what the four different termination steps are? Yes. Does it matter which one happens, though? Not really. We just need to know that there are these different possibilities. And so even in a well-behaved reaction, you're going to have small traces of byproducts. Yes.
Which one is more likely to occur? Determination?
Well, we could predict it in terms of thermodynamics, but then there's also a concentration effect that would come into play. Where even if something might be more favorable in terms of energy, you might have something that was less favorable that might happen if there are many more chances for it to happen. So I can't tell you offhand which one of these is more likely. But we do need to address the question of regiochemistry for the core of the reaction itself, this propagation step. Because I showed it reacting with a tertiary hydrogen, but it could there could be reactions with the secondary and primary hydrogens as well. So instead of worrying about the termination step, let's worry about that propagation step. Because what we're really going to be discussing, therefore, is regiochemistry. So now, section one, you've got a little advantage for the moment, because we've already discussed this idea this morning of chemical equivalency. And besides NMR, this is another place where chemical equivalency matters. Because if I were to throw one bromide, or let's in fact switch over to talking about chloride for the moment, since chlorine can be used as well. If I threw one chloride radical at that molecule, how many unique products could form? You're both right. Four or five, depending on whether or not we're worried about stereochemistry. To keep things simple for the moment, because I want to focus on regiochemistry first, let's say I ignore stereochemistry. So if I ignore stereochemistry, how many unique products are there?
Four.
Why? Well, I could have substitution at that same tertiary position I already showed in my first example. Or I could have substitution at the secondary position. Chemical equivalency. And I'm not going to talk about it much here because you're going to have a full lecture after your exam in the lab today.
Is that HV?
It is. Well, actually, it's H nu, technically. It's not a V. It's a Greek letter nu. It's not V. It looks like one. But in Greek, capital letter nu looks like, no, that's eta. Nu looks like that. Lowercase looks like that. So, secondary product, this is the one that does have a stereocenter. So, for those of you who haven't had the lecture on equivalency yet, just realize you could form an R or an S stereocenter there. Now we have two other products, though. One where the chloride substitutes at this primary position versus having substitution at the other primary position. One common mistake is to lump all primary hydrogens together and call them equivalent. But as we can see, we have two very distinct products that would form. In one case, we have one chloro 3 methyl butane. In the other case, we have 1 chloro 2 methyl butane. So four unique products. In terms of regiochemistry, we can answer which one of these is more likely to form. But we have to discuss a little bit of a reaction coordinate diagram first. Why? Because it turns out for halogenation with the chloride, the first step of the reaction, the first propagation step of a chloride reacting with an alkane to form HCl plus the alkyl radical, delta H is normally less than zero. So it's exothermic. Now we're going to have our first chance for me to talk formally about the word stable. Because really to talk about things that are stable means you have to compare two equivalent chemical systems. If I have butane versus dodecane, 12 carbons versus 4, those are not equivalent molecules. Even if I have the same reaction going on for both of those molecules, and I might be able to make some statement about how much energy it takes in this molecule versus another one, since they're not the same molecule, I can't really say, oh, this one's more stable than the other, because it's comparing two completely different systems. In this reaction coordinate diagram I'm just about to show you, I'm going to take the same starting reagents, the alkane and the chloride radical, and I'm going to show you different outcomes. But because they all start at the same point, it is perfectly valid for me to put all of them on the same reaction coordinate diagram. Because of this, these different outcomes, which will have different energy levels, the lower the energy, the more stable, I can now use that word properly, because I'm comparing different results from the same starting point. Now, I won't keep bringing this point up because your text, like many others, at some point just stops worrying about that technicality and just uses the phrase stable liberally all over the place. But when I was in grad school, and I have to give you a little background to this, at Berkeley, at the time I got my PhD, coursework was de-emphasized, research was emphasized. So I think I only took 4 courses my entire grad school time at Berkeley. 4, maybe 5, and one of them was not a difficult course. The one course that was the most important is physical organic chemistry, where we do OCHEM, but with math and calculations and worrying about all the details. And it's the one lecture I remember the most clearly of the instructor getting up and talking about this word, stable. It took me years to realize why he was so concerned about it, but I learned. Because if I say, here's two completely different molecules, you might have a molecule where in that particular case, it's a secondary carbocation that forms, but that might not require as much energy as a tertiary carbocation in some other rare case. So in terms of raw energy, you might have a secondary carbocation that, everything being equal, forms more easily than a tertiary. But if on that same molecule you had the ability of a tertiary carbocation to form, it's going to be at lower energy than the secondary. So within that molecule, it's always correct to say tertiaries are more stable than secondaries. But from one molecule to the next, in terms of just the numerical value of energy, it might not be a correct statement. Now, we will never run into that situation in this class. But that's why he made a big point about it, because if you're doing research where it really matters every small last detail, knowing that you can compare two systems or not is hugely important. With all that preamble, let's just say a tertiary radical is more stable than a secondary, which is more stable than a primary. And if this is an exothermic process, that means I'm going to have these three different energy possibilities occur: tertiary, secondary, and either one of the primaries in this case. That means there's going to be three different curves I could draw. If this is a one-step process, in all cases I'll have just one transition state. And the transition states, in fact, will be very similar in energy. The secondary's transition state will be a little lower. The tertiaries will be a little lower still. Lower activation energy means higher rate of reaction. That's why we spend all that time worrying about activation energy and energy distributions. So because that activation energy is smaller than the primaries, that explains why the tertiary radical forms more easily. Now, on top of this graph, which might have made very much sense what I just said right now, there is one principle behind it that you need to know, which is the Hammond postulate.
Why did you write E to the x-axis?
Because I'm talking and not looking at what I'm doing.
Okay.
So the Hammond postulate says this, that in a transition state, the structure of that transition state will more closely match either the product or reactant or intermediate that is closer in energy to that transition state. So the structure of the transition state more closely matches the structure of the product, reactant, or intermediate that is closer in energy to the transition state. The point of making mention of this Hammond postulate is so I could look at the reactant, the alkane, and say, well, the transition states for the three possibilities, making the primary versus the secondary versus the tertiary radical, those transition states are going to be close in energy because they're all close to the original starting material. So there's not a lot of differentiation between these. So in this case, since the transition state more closely resembles the reactant, there's not a huge difference in the activation energies. For forming the primary versus secondary versus tertiary carbocations. Yes. Actually, that's a poorly written symbol. The real symbol, oh gosh, I won't take the time to do it properly, but it looks more like this. It's called a double dagger. 1 minute.
Oh, I see.
And actually, it's stylized. It looks kind of like this, where it's got little polygons of the sorts. It looks like two crosses put together, you could say.
It seems like it would take longer to draw it than it would write transition state.
Well, that's why I'm lazy and just write it like this. But that symbol is used universally in chemistry to mean transition state, so you should know what that symbol is. So it's not a not equal sign, it is a transition state. So, the relative rates of reactivities of a primary versus a secondary versus a tertiary hydrogen with the chloride radical is 1 to 4 to 5. It's actually more like 1 to 3.8 to 5, but I like round numbers. So 5 times more quickly the tertiary will form than the primary. So let's go back up to the, well, let me let you write that down real quick. But then let's go back up to the example we were working on where we made these 4 different products. Based on that idea that the tertiary forms 5 times more quickly than the secondary than the primary, which of these products is going to be the major one? First, second, third, or fourth? First. Wrong. And I know you're going to look at me and say, but you just told us tertiary is more reactive. How many tertiary hydrogens are there? One. How many of this kind of primary hydrogen are there on this molecule? This kind, six. Because this position is the same as this position, but not the same as the other primary position, because it makes a different molecule if it reacts, that particular carbon. So there are six hydrogens that are all the same. So if you have six hydrogens times a rate, a relative reaction rate of one, then you get a relative distribution of that product of six. For this other primary, there's six hydrogens times one, which gives you, three hydrogens times one, which gives you three. For the secondary, there's only two hydrogens, but they react four times as quickly, so it has a distribution of eight. And then the tertiary, there's only one hydrogen, so even though it reacts five times as quickly, it only has a relative distribution of five. This is the main product of the reaction. This is regiochemistry. Regiochemistry means where does the functional group end up? So one thing you need to know about the radical reaction is that every possible product will form. Every possible position that a hydrogen could be removed will make a product. But then which is the most likely product depends on the combination of how many hydrogens there are, so what's the probability that it's going to be reactive, multiplied by its relative rate of reaction. How hot is the hydrogen to react? So let me summarize that. In radical halogenation, every possible product, meaning generated from every type of removable hydrogen, will form. The major product depends on the number of hydrogens involved, or I'll just say it this way, the distribution of products depends on the number of hydrogens involved multiplied by the relative reactivity of that hydrogen. But this is for chloride. How does it change when we go to bromide? Well, it turns out that primary versus secondary versus tertiary reactivity is 1. To 80 to 1600, if you round the numbers up. Why this huge differentiation now? Now, chloride, primary versus secondary versus tertiary, wasn't that much different, which actually makes free radical chlorination not always the best reaction. Bromide works much better, although overall the process is slower. Why? Because the reaction step of going from a bromide reacting with an alkane to having that hydrogen bromide form and then the alkyl radical, it's endothermic. That means the alkyl radical that forms is higher in energy. Since the transition state will now be closer in energy to the product, there's more differentiation between the different activation energies. So if we wanted to write a combined reaction coordinate diagram for this case, it would look like the following. So again, since the transition state in this reaction step more closely resembles the product, there is a greater difference in the activation energies. For the formation of a primary versus secondary versus tertiary radical. Which is why we have 1 versus 80 versus 1600 being that difference in relative rate. So if we had the same reaction, if we used the same alkane, reacted it with bromine and light, then we'll get the same four types of products. Substitution at the tertiary, substitution at the secondary, substitution at the two different primaries. Now if we look at the relative distribution, there may only be 1 tertiary hydrogen, but it reacts 1,600 times as quickly. So we get a relative product distribution of 1,600. For the secondary, there's only 2 hydrogens. It's got a relative rate of 80, so you'd get 160 relative distribution. For the primaries, we have 6 times 1, and 3 times 1. So the amount of primary product will almost be non-existent in this case. So when possible, if halogenation is going to be done, bromine is used instead of chlorine. Because of its much greater regiochemical selectivity. Now, you can't squeeze everything I just said on 1 note card, or even if you could, you wouldn't be able to read it then. So you just need to know that tertiary more reactive than secondary, more reactive than primary, and bromine much better than chlorine. Since they're simple numbers, and I don't make you learn a bunch of numbers in this course, you need to know that the relative reactivities for chlorine are 1, 4, and 5, and you need to know the rounded numbers for bromine are 1, 80, 1600. Yes?
I'm a little confused about how to calculate those hydrogen tertiary.
You're in section 2, so if it's okay for right now, I'll ask that you wait till your lab section, and we'll go over what chemical equivalency is. So if you're confused how I got those number of hydrogens, you'll get a better answer later on today. Yes?
I'm so confused about how or why radicals, or tertiary radicals, are more reactive than primary.
It's not that they're more reactive, it's that they're lower in energy. And I can't answer that because the exam is not finished. Because the answer is the same as it would be for carbocations. As you go to tertiary, which is exactly what I've shown here, because I have tertiary at lower energy. That means more stable. And that's why forming them, it's much faster for the tertiary than secondary than primary. Yeah, for bromine, forming the radical, it's, if this, forming this is a rate of 1, this would be a rate of 80, and this would be a rate of 1600. It's not that those radicals are more reactive. Forming the radical is more reactive, which is the same way of saying it's more stable. Does that make a little more sense now? Okay. Now, chlorination, because it's not as selective, is usually used only when you have symmetric molecules. So an example your book gives of using chlorination is cyclohexane. Because no matter which of the hydrogens gets removed, you're going to make chlorocyclohexane. Yes? That's my next point. Iodine is not used because the reaction overall is endothermic, which means in light, alkyl iodides decompose. Means reverse reaction. The iodine actually comes off, and you'll form either an alkane or, by disproportionation, an alkene. So you take an alkyl iodide, put it in light, and you'll see if it's a clear solution to begin with, it starts turning yellow because iodine gets released. Fluorine can't be used.
Bromine is also endothermic.
Overall? No, I think overall, no, that's just the first step of the reaction that's endothermic. But the overall reaction is exothermic for bromine. It's exothermic for chlorine. It's more exothermic for chlorine than bromine, which is why chlorination, even though it's less selective, because of it, it's also a faster reaction. Fluorine is not used Because the overall reaction is too exothermic. Which results in there being almost no difference in the activation energies. For forming different kinds of radicals. For fluorine, the differentiation between primary, secondary, and tertiary is roughly 1 to 1.2 to 1.4. 1.4. Fluorine just reacts with anything. It's so darn reactive. I mean, think about fluoride dot, fluoride radical. It just gets that one electron from somewhere and it's fluoride. It's the most electronegative element on the periodic table. It has the highest electron affinity. So it just pulls electrons from anywhere it can get it. And so in this case, that means it has such poor selectivity that it's just not used. Not at least if you want to make a monohalogenated product. One thing I haven't discussed anywhere along the way here is that a side product that can form is that if multiple halogenation occurs. Now for fluorine, that's done on purpose because that's how we get things like Teflon. But this is our one and only radical reaction for the moment. There are two other things that we will talk about in the quarter. One might be in this chapter, I forget if it's in the same part in your textbook, but one involves allyl radicals, which we'll catch after we do alkenes. And the other, do you want to hear the rest of what I can stop now. If you want to hear it, I can continue. So the other case is in the reaction of an alkyne. I just want to give you this heads up so that when you read this section, if you see mention of alkynes or allyl radicals, ignore it just for the moment. Focus on the halogenation. Last announcement is if you are so buried in studying that you haven't come to this realization, there is no class Friday. Oh, yeah. So just want to make sure you did know that because I won't be here Friday. Because hopefully you won't either. Here, at least, that is.